podcast. This is our first podcast in our series on emotional health. Each week during these next 4 weeks, we're going to take a specific emotional health issue that college students wrestle with, and we're going to kind of wrestle with that together in scripture and in dialogue and conversation. And so this week, I'm excited as we wrestle with the issue of anxiety to bring on a good dear friend of mine, Andy Melton, to help us out with the podcast. Andy, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
Yeah, so Andy and I go back a few years, just a little bit. But before we get into that, so you got your doctoral degree, right, from Phoenix Online, Phoenix University. Is that right?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, it was 10 credit hours, and you had to write a 3-page paper at the end. Is that what?
That's right. The National University of all things. It was a 3-week process.
Okay, before we go to that, so Andy and I go way back. We've been close friends since we were 14 years old. Yes. He lives in Nashville right now, so he's in Nashville recording it on his end, and I'm recording this on my end. And so because of all of our history, this should be fun.
Right. And we will put pictures of us at 14 in the show notes. Okay, great.
No, definitely not. Summer found one of us outside. Yes. You remember whenever we're at the pool and that? Okay, moving on. Not make it awkward before we get going.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell us kind of your journey to where you are now as Dr. Melton, PhD.
Yeah, so, well, as far as the education goes, from Joplin, did my undergrad at Ozark, thought I'd be in ministry my whole life, but just a few years out of that, ended up taking a look at counseling, ended up at John Brown University for a master's degree, clinical counseling and marriage and family therapy. After several years of being a counselor in several different settings, which, by the way, I love. It's a great profession. Love what I do. And I got to the point where I wanted to learn more. And so ended up moving to Nashville, Tennessee. Trevecca University here has a nationally accredited, it's called KCREP accredited doctorate in what they call counselor education and supervision. And so I've just finished that up here a couple of years ago. Nashville became home. We've almost been here 10 years now. And so our home is now Nashville. We love Nashville. But I finished up my degree just a couple of years ago.
That's awesome, man. And so your PhD is specifically in what area? What's your focus?
Yeah, so counselor education and supervision is sort of it's the terminal degree in my lane of the mental health highway, if you will. There's lots of different philosophies of how to help people. The LPC, Licensed Professional Counselor, is my lane, if you will, of how that works. And in my lane, that's the terminal degree that allows you to be a researcher, teacher, supervisor, and so on in my field and in my track.
That's awesome. So in other words, you kind of know what you're talking about professionally on some of these issues.
In my lane, you bet.
Yeah. Is that weird to say? It feels like you're bragging or something. But you didn't go to school for all those years for nothing. So, congratulations on the PhD. And then just really quick, when was your last time to come to Joplin?
During the Super Bowl, baby. It was wonderful. Yeah, it was awesome.
Where were you? Where'd you watch the Chiefs win that victory?
From Josh Quadi's living room.
You know it. I was kind of a casual fan, and then Andy kind of got me in on it, and
so when we wanted kids, to watch. Yeah.
Yep, and then Chiefs won Super Bowl. We celebrated. We had this great moment, and then you drove back to Nashville immediately afterwards.
Night. That's right, a red eye all night long. Night.
And then you had clients the next day, a full day of clients. So. Yep.
I don't want to do too many of those days. I may be getting a little old for that, but it was worth it. It was wonderful. The way I describe it here in Nashville, when people ask, is it was a bunch of grown men hugging is really what it was.
It really was, man. I shed some tears for sure. Yeah, but it's been fun. So, okay, so to the topic, okay?
Yeah.
So we're dealing with anxiety issues. You know, when we're thinking of struggles that college students deal with all the time, anxiety is definitely up there from what my own personal experience talking with students. So help us understand, you know, what is anxiety, and then even kind of part what isn't anxiety.
Yeah, well, anxiety is a great thing to be discussing for your podcast, and I'm glad you guys are doing this and taking the time to put out some of this information. Anxiety, maybe you've heard this, anxiety is sort of an epidemic right now, and it kind of is, where lots and lots of people are dealing with higher and higher levels of fear and anxiety that is debilitating somehow. It's interrupting their life in some way or another. At its very core, you know, anxiety is the feeling of worry and nervousness, unease, and really about an unknown, an uncertain outcome that, you know, and so I've heard it described before that, you know, fear, which anxiety is just, it's sort of another word for fear, so that they're kind of together. But okay. Fear is sort of being scared of the bear, the big black bear that's standing right in front of you. Anxiety is being scared of the idea of a big black bear standing in front of you, right? So
gotcha.
So that's a little bit of the difference there, but generally anxiety is fear of the unknown, and it can trip people up for sure.
Gotcha. So there's so much out there, you know, where people can read about and study about what anxiety is, and there's a lot of self-diagnosis sometimes. Sure. Like I'm having I know someone, you know, they have panic attacks or they have anxiety. How do we know when it truly is anxiety or when it's something else?
Yeah, great question. So the truth is we all experience anxiety and oftentimes every day to some level. Anxiety, again, is sort of part of fear. Fear is a natural, it's one of our basic emotions. And a lot of times we might question whether it's right or wrong to feel that fear or feel that anxiety. Personally, I don't ascribe to that. I feel like our emotion, including fear, is kind of part of us. It's an extremity, if you will. And so just like you wouldn't necessarily ponder, hey, is my left foot good or bad, right? Nobody would ever spend time thinking that because your left foot is just new. It's just part of who you are. It's the same with emotion. The emotion in and of itself is not good or bad necessarily. It is part of who you are. It is what it is, if you will. Now, how we experience it, how we choose to use it, that can make something, you know, that can make that emotion good or bad. But just the feeling of it in and of itself is kind of just part of who we are. So to your question about, you know, how do we know it's something, you know, serious versus maybe something that we just all experience, which we do, a lot of us on a daily basis at times, is really the intensity level of it. And here's a good way to think about it is, if your anxiety is interrupting your normal daily functioning somehow, some way, right? So social functioning, if it's getting in the way, you won't go to a certain party, certain gathering, you know, whatever, because you're feeling that fear and anxiety, if it prevents you from going somewhere socially or professionally, if it prevents you from doing certain jobs on your job description or arriving to your job on time and those kinds of things. If you've ever been reprimanded for tardiness due to fears and anxieties that kept you at home, or if you've ever lost a job due to certain anxieties that kept you away from your normal duties, that's a pretty good sign that anxiety is something, you know, it's at the level of maybe what we call, you know, serious or a disorder of some sort. So that's a great way to look at it. If it is interrupting your normal daily functioning, either socially, professionally, in your family, your relationships, those kinds of things, and it is really getting in the way of things and maybe even breaking down things, for example, job or certain relationships. If you can look back and say, yeah, my anxiety was part of the reason that that thing went bad, then there's mm-hmm. a pretty good chance that's a serious thing. On the flip side, we all experience fear and anxiety and nervousness all the time. Our bodies respond to it. So it's not a bad thing to feel it, but it's more mm-hmm. if it interrupts some of the major categories of life.
So if you know, we're getting ready, there's a big test coming up, and we're sweating, nervous, we're, you know, unable to think clearly, you know, like really struggling, you would say, if we still take it, that's a positive thing, and all the stuff that we felt before then are part of it. But if it keeps us from going to class, you know, yeah. keeps us from even attempting the test, that might be the line where we go, no, there might be something stronger going on here.
Yeah, that's a good way to say it. So if you feel all those, that uncomfortable feeling, and all of our bodies do it, right? Our heart palpitates, it starts beating a little faster than usual. You know, we get sweaty on our hands or armpits or at the top of our head. You know, maybe we breathe a little differently. In and of itself, that's pretty common thing. That's a pretty common thing when we're taking a test or doing something that's important, right?
Yeah.
We all get nervous at times, and we all feel those things at times. But you're right, as you said, if that same feeling prevented you from showing up for the test, and it prevented mm-hmm. you from going to class for some reason, and maybe you failed the class or the test or the whole class due to some of those feelings. That's kind of a different level for sure.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I want to come back to, you know, what do we do when we're faced with those kind of challenges and stuff like
sure.
that? So let me go to this question. So why do you think it's so, you know, so I work, you know, with college students, why do you think it's anxiety is so prevalent within this stage of life?
Yeah, I think this is a great question to consider. And for one, the environment calls for it, right? So if a college student is in the education process, is in the world of academia, in its very nature, that world is an evaluative environment, meaning that you are being, as a college student, you're being evaluated mm-hmm. every step of the way for years, right? Of everything yeah. you do academically. Oftentimes you're evaluated on other things outside of academics, whether it be clubs, sports, social events, even yeah. down to if you're in the dorms and you're being evaluated at certain behaviors, right? So that is a time that is unique in the sense that you're always being looked at, you're always being evaluated and looked at with a critical eye, and therefore it can be an anxious time. It sort yeah. of makes everybody a little uneasy when they know someone is watching and evaluating their actions. Now, if we broaden out a little larger picture, sort of the bigger picture, if we're talking generationally, you know, the people who are used to the technology as we have it now, and maybe they've never known it different. I know you and I, mm-hmm. Josh, our generation is unique because we got to experience both. Actually, we're in a unique generation called the Xennials, as they call it. It's sort of a mix.
You've read about that?
I have.
Yeah,
it's
me
really
too.
Interesting
I totally.
Stuff.
It totally nails me. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But back to them.
But yeah.
I didn't know you read on that. That's awesome.
Yeah, we could go on about that because it's really interesting. Yeah. We spent half our adolescence in the analog world. We spent the other half in the digital world. So it is a unique thing. But for the folks who grew up in the digital world and do not know anything but the digital world, here's the thing. If that's you, you mm-hmm. have very rarely in your life ever not known something. Think about it. You've never, you very rarely have you ever had to live in a state of not knowing because technology is at a place where if you have any question mm-hmm. at any time, we can figure it out. We can find out via the palm of our hand with our phone and whatever else, right? So it is a unique way to grow up. And because of that, think of how that intersects then with the emotion of fear and anxiety, because by definition, anxiety is the fear of the unknown, which we all experience sometimes. But this the college-age students, Josh, in your program, very likely never known life without that type of technology. It can spike anxiety for sure, because you just don't have to deal with not knowing very often.
So it's like, so there's just culturally, you know, we've grown up with technology, and so we always have the ability to know things on tip, you know, at the palm of our hands. Like you said, we can ask Siri, we can ask Google, you know, anything at any time, we'll get an answer. And then on top of that, you put all the pressure of this stage of life. You know, we just got done doing an identity study as a college ministry. Mm. And in that study, it's like, you know, we're trying to figure out who we are and all this kind of stuff in a high pressure situation where coaches and professors are telling us our worth almost, or at least our potential. And it makes sense why there's so much anxiety at this time.
Yeah.
So there's another factor too, which is how much does, I guess I would say, what are some of the sources of anxiety? Like, where does it come from? You know?
Yeah.
From our stories, from our pasts, you know? So there's situational things.
Yep.
Right. Yep. You know, like taking a test and all this kind of stuff. But maybe some students deal with more prolonged anxiety centered around specific things. What could be some of the sources for that?
Yeah, great question. So you're absolutely right. Situational, or what we might call circumstantial anxiety, that's something we all experience at times, right? Where the context of that particular season of our life or particular situation of our day breeds the emotion of fear and anxiety.
Third quarter of the Super Bowl.
So that's right. And the first half of the fourth. That's right.
None of us were standing or sitting down. We're all pacing, watching the game.
It was business. That's right. That's right. Yeah. It felt so much like a loss until 6 minutes in the fourth quarter, right? So anyway.
Oh my gosh. So good. Okay. Back point. Yeah.
It was amazing. It was the best feeling after the anxiety. It was great. But
circumstantial anxiety.
Circumstantial anxiety is one thing. But to your point, some of us are given to more, maybe a little more anxiety than others, or a lot more anxiety than others, via what you mentioned, maybe our upbringing, our childhood, the way we were raised, maybe, or the circumstances of our life, socioeconomic status to... you know, just all the factors of life that contribute to who we are when we're older. There's definitely circumstances, environmental factors that can contribute to increased anxiety. I also believe that the chemical makeup, right, the physiology of our lives can contribute as well. And so hereditary sort of tendencies, they exist. And so if you have family members, siblings, parents, grandparents who dealt with a lot of anxiety, then it is not, it's not odd that you would then deal with a lot of anxiety. Another factor might be personality. There's lots out there about personality. I think you may be aware of things like the Enneagram or the Myers-Briggs or things, and college students, it's a great time to look into all those things. It's a fun time to learn about yourself and your identity. And so I do think certain personality types do give themselves more to fear and anxiety than others. And so there's a lot of contributors that can set the stage for a little more anxiety than maybe others feel.
So how do we know that?
Yeah.
You know, self-diagnosis can be tricky.
Yeah.
You know, how do we understand what we came from, and how does that impact us? You know, maybe we look back at some things, like some students, you know, they have pretty difficult time lives, home lives growing up, and it doesn't seem to affect them that much at all. But other students, it's really hard for them. How do we know to what level those things have impacted us?
Well, that's a great question. It's based a lot on the context of each person in their lives and all those factors we mentioned. One way to find out more is to sort of informally, you know, do an analysis for yourself of who am I. You might look more into your personality. You might look more into your family history. You might actually take the opportunity to ask questions to family members of, hey, back in the day, you know, when stress hit our family, how did we typically handle it as a family? And maybe, what do you remember of me at age 6, 7, or 8? You know, what did you notice from me in those days? And so you can do some informal work for sure to sort of help inform you as to, hey, I feel like anxiety is part of my story. I'd like to know more. Then there's the more formal route, which we'll kind of get into maybe a little bit more at the end, but you know, what do? You can get involved in a process like therapy, counseling, those kinds of things that those people are trained to help you observe your story, help ask questions that get you moving and build insight about some of the origins of how you navigate life.
Okay. Well, let's go. Yeah, that's good. Let's just even dive into some of those. So,
sure.
You know, so whether you have, you know, whether the student's dealing with anxiety that's situational, circumstantial, or there's a history of anxiety and they're dealing with it, what are some real, I mean, what can we do? How can we not let this wreck our lives and understand it?
Yeah. Well, and it goes back to what we were talking about before. You know, if you are realizing that your anxiety, your fears and anxieties are a little bit more than the average person that you see around you, right? Maybe your anxiety has interrupted normal life functioning. Maybe you've lost jobs or relationships or grades, certain grades, because of some of those fears and anxieties. That's a good thing to take notice of. And if that's the case, it's good to put yourself in the presence of people who are trained to work with you on that. You know, counseling and therapy, it has a stigma to it, for sure. But I will tell you, at its very simplest form, and, you know, counseling is being in the same room with someone else who is not part of your world, who is not emotionally connected with your family or your friends. And that makes them more objective. They can ask good questions that get you moving. And so at its simplest form, that is counseling. So it does have a stigma to it, but I invite you, if that's you, if anxiety has interrupted your daily stuff and it has led to loss of certain things in your life, you know, get connected with a trained counselor, therapist, professional who can help you sort of dig into all of that.
And I'll make a plug here, you know, both campuses, Southern and Ozark, both have counselors accessible. You know, Southern has a full-time counselor that you can go and talk to. Several students have done that, and I know that she's really helped some of the students out. And then Ozark has opportunities for them. Restoration Counseling is kind of my go-to counseling center here in Joplin.
Nice.
That I really recommend students go to. I really trust them and their staff, and they do a great job and really understand and listen. You know, Andy, one of the things that, I don't know, I kind of say, and you can tell me if I'm right or wrong on this, is that counseling oftentimes is just to help us understand ourselves.
Sure.
It's not because we're incredibly broken and need to be fixed. It's more just we need to understand how we think and how we operate and be more informed.
That's right. That's exactly right. It's the kind of information that's hard to get from a family member or a friend because that family member and friend are involved, right? They are emotionally connected. In a sense, it's kind of a conflict of interest, if you will, right? If you're really wanting to know an unbiased opinion about your world and how you think and how you navigate life, friends and family are great, but they're definitely going to, it's going to be a loaded response because they're family and friends. They love you. They know you. They want the best for you. Counselors want the best for you, but in a cool way, counselors are disconnected enough from your world that they can listen with fresh ears. And that's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah. So, okay. So I think I cut you off a second ago. So counseling obviously is a great option for those who are wrestling with, you know, the deeper levels or harder forms of anxiety. You know, what about just day to day? How do we not let it just be anxious all the time?
Yeah. This, I love talking about this because it, as I've said before, fear and anxiety, that it's a part of life. It really is. Now, if it gets too much, then you go that more formal route. But in truth, you know, we all experience it, and it's okay. It's okay to be anxious. It's okay to be fearful. It happens to all of us sometimes and probably on a daily basis. So what can we do to help decrease that sometimes? It's not a comfortable feeling, for sure.
Uh-huh.
It is a meaningful feeling. I do think our fears and anxieties are by design. I think God, he designed us with sort of warning systems, if you will, and ways to get our attention. And I think if our fears and anxieties are spiking, it's a good thing to be aware of and start looking into and asking ourselves, hey, why am I feeling this certain way right now? Here, let's talk very practically about anxiety for a second, okay?
Okay.
So anxiety has a lot of, there's a lot to the research and study of anxiety. There's, you know, the psychological nomenclature of anxiety is vast, right? So you've just got this, all this research and all these people. But let's boil it down, all right? Let's boil it down for just a second and think about it in this way. Think about anxiety, in a sense, as being stuck in the future. Okay? Being stuck in the future.
Okay.
Now, that's an oversimplification of anxiety, I know. But let's just conceptualize it as that for a second.
Okay?
We were meant to live right here, right now, in the present, right? If you're listening to this podcast, you are listening to it right now. You are sitting in your car, you are sitting in your dorm room, you are wherever you are right there, right now. You are present because you are listening to this podcast. Josh and I, right now, we are present as we talk about this podcast. But here's what happens is sometimes we begin to worry about some future event that takes us out of the present. We don't do very well to live in two different places at once, okay? It's a split. It's called incongruence, okay? So it's a split of mind and body. An example of this is maybe being stuck in traffic and people will be in traffic, their body, you know, they're sitting in traffic, but their mind is playing ahead. It's kind of like fast-forwarding a movie. It's playing ahead maybe 10 minutes, maybe a few hours, and they are already imagining arriving at their destination. They're already imagining the activities that they're going to do at their destination, right? And it splits their presence, if you will. It splits their mind and body. It's an incongruent thing, and it puts stress on the body, which is oftentimes why traffic brings out the brings out the worst in all of us, right? And it's because we are oftentimes we are living ahead. And I'll tell you, there's a difference between looking ahead and living ahead. Okay? Looking ahead is preparing for something.
That's good.
Right? Yeah. Like a test or, you know, preparing for your work day, whatever. Living ahead is where we allow our minds to actually attempt to live ahead, maybe 10 minutes, maybe 10 hours, maybe 10 days, and it puts a lot of stress on the body. So, if that's true, if anxiety is being stuck in the future, then how do we pull ourselves back to the now, right? How do we live more in the present? And I try to imagine maybe a lasso. If you think of a cowboy with a lasso, and the lasso, and we're swinging the lasso above our heads, and we lunge the lasso forward, wrap it around our future selves, and we're slowly pulling the rope back, trying to get ourselves back into the now. Well, there's a few ways to do this, and one of the ways, which is the most basic, and we overlook it a lot of times, is breathing, is just simply breathing. Breathing is something our bodies are doing all the time. We hardly ever notice it. And so one way to bring ourselves back into the now is to pay attention to our breathing. And so let me give you an example of what this looks like. I call it the 4-second breathe box. Okay, the 4-second breathe box.
Okay.
And here's a simple way to do it. You'll sit up in your seat. You want to straighten your spine and allow for your oxygen to sort of get into all parts of your body. And and while you're sitting there, you can do this covertly where people don't notice. So if you're in a crowded room, or you can do it more where you involve your hand and you put your hand in front of you and you actually make a box formation with your hand. Okay. And so one part of the box is breathing in for 4 seconds.
Okay.
The top part of the box is holding for 4 seconds. The other side of the box going down is breathing out for 4 seconds slowly. And the bottom part of that box is resting or breathing normally. Okay? Mm. So this is just one way. And if you'll do that, say 4 times, just to keep with the theme of 4, a lot of times, if our anxieties are kicked up, it can help decrease those anxieties a little bit, bring us back more into the now by breathing and paying attention to the now. Sometimes during that 4-second breathe box, people will meditate on certain scriptures or a certain thought in their mind that they want to kind of come back to the now. And I know this is help for me, and I know it's help for a lot of people. So the 4-second breathe box is one way to get in the present, and it's especially helpful if you're preparing for a test or something along those lines in an academic setting.
I just did it.
Yeah.
I feel more in the now with you, Andy.
We are together, you and me. Here we are.
We're in the now, buddy. Okay. Anything else? Any other kind of simple?
Yeah. Yeah. Let me give you a couple more before we, before we wrap up here. So the 4-second breathe box is a great option. Another option is something called a sensory scan. All right. Sensory scan. You may have heard of this, and this is where you systematically go through all of your 5 senses and attempt to notice 3 or 4 or 5 things from each sense. Okay. So if it's hearing, you would pay attention to what you're hearing. You would notice the different things in the room that you can hear, you know, try to notice 3 to 5 things.
Yeah.
And then you move to the next sense of sight. You move to the next sense of taste and touch, and smell, and so on. And that, remember, our senses, this is how we interpret the physical world. So when our minds are escaping the present, and maybe we are living in the future, and we're a little bit stuck in the future, paying attention to our senses can help sort of bring us back to the now. I had a guy who told me he liked to use M&Ms for this. And so he would keep a bag of M&Ms around, and when he would get feeling anxious sometimes, he would throw an M&M in his mouth and not chew it up. He would take the time to let it dissolve slowly in his mouth. Mm-hmm. He would taste the different tastes and different, I guess an M&M has, you know, layers and all of that. And it was probably 60 to 90 seconds but it helped him to sort of ground himself back into the present. So that's one idea, is that sensory scan.
Gotcha. That's okay, cool.
And let me give you one more, and okay. That is called the body scan. Okay, the body scan.
Okay.
And this is really great. You can do it in a room full of people, very inconspicuously, or when you're back at your room, you can lay down and do this. But basically, this is starting with your toes. You systematically go up your body through the different muscle parts of your body. So for example, your toes, you would crinkle your toes for, let's keep with the 4 second idea here. So you crinkle for 4 seconds and release. Crinkle for 4 seconds and release, right? Then you move from toes up to your ankles, that next muscle group, and
I'm doing it right now.
There you go. There you go. Hold your ankles sort of tight for 4 seconds, release. Do it again for 4 and release, and make your way all up through the major muscle groups of your body, all the way up to your head. This process can take anywhere from a couple of minutes, if all the way up to, 5 or 8 minutes. You can do it while you're sitting, you can do it while you're laying down, but this is a great way to if your mind is escaping into the future, it's a great way to pay attention to the now and get your body involved. It's when our mind and body is a little split, when we're incongruent, it can put extra stress on the body. And so any of these three things, the 4 second breathe box, the sensory scan, the body scan, these are all tools to help us decrease anxiety just a little bit.
I actually been doing this body scan thing, and I feel incredibly powerful right now. My muscles are I'm just jacked. So strong. Okay, so one more question that I thought of kind of as we're talking through this.
Sure.
You're a man of God, love the Lord. You bet. A Christian was actually a big piece of me coming to know Jesus, so thanks for that. Is there a spiritual deficiency? So anxiety, when I think of anxiety, like for me, at times when I feel anxious, I feel like I'm not being faithful to God or that God can carry me through this. So I remember the prayer, do not be anxious about anything, but with prayer and petition, offer your requests to the Lord. So I'd be anxious and I'd be like, do not be anxious about anything. Do not be anxious about anything. And I felt like I was spiritually deficient because I was dealing with anxiety. Can you just as a believer help me understand that?
Yeah. My first thought when you bring that up, Josh, is no. I don't think it's a spiritual deficiency. I really don't. I think it's part of who we are. The don't be anxious talk, as you just mentioned, it actually uses the term, the Greek term for the idea of anxiety, right? We all experience it. I think Jesus himself in the garden prior to his suffering experienced something very similar to anxiety, if not exactly that, something to anxiety. And it is, I think it's a natural sort of part of our design. I think it can get out of control at times where we take the steps to kind of get it back in control. But I don't know that that is a reflection of our spirituality, of the strength of our faith. Yeah. I think, honestly, we hear a lot about courage. People, men and women of faith who have a lot of courage, that's what courage is. The definition of courage is to overcome fear. And we could probably put that word anxiety in right there. So some of the men and women of faith that we know that we look up to, some of our mentors, it is very likely, and I would probably bet on this, that they experience fear and anxiety just like everyone else. But what sets them apart maybe a little bit and is their courage to overcome it, to push through it, to do what they feel God is leading them to do, and to keep moving forward. And so, I don't think it's a deficiency. I think it's part of who we are, and and part of our design.
Yeah, and even you talked about the chemical side of it. It's not a deficiency to have the chemical imbalance, and sometimes anxiety medicine can be long form, but isn't there just sometimes it's just short term if a doctor diagnoses you just to help you get chemically balanced again?
You bet. Yeah. And we actually didn't talk about medications, but
yeah,
but that's a great, I'm glad you brought that up because that's right. It's medications are a good thing at the right season. And typically they are used for a temporary amount of time. That medications are very effective when connected with other efforts like the counseling process. And so it can, those medications can do a lot for us to sort of rewrite the chemical balance a little bit. And the fact, if there is a chemical imbalance of some sort, if there's a physiology issue that contributes to the anxiety, it's not necessarily a sign of something wrong or bad. It really, many times we, in our life, a lot of stuff happens, right? And in a lot of context. Yep. And so there are going to be times, there are going to be seasons of life when we're more anxious than others. And there are going to be seasons when we're not as anxious and it's okay. And so whether it's medication from a psychiatrist or a primary care physician who prescribes some anxiety meds, that's great. Try to think of it in a temporary amount of time and try to link it. Try to link those medications to other efforts similar to like a counseling process that, according to the research, that really is the most effective way to move through that. But in any of those cases, whether it's chemical, spiritual, emotional, anxiety is not a bad thing, and it's not a sign of a bad thing or a wrong thing. It really is kind of part of the human existence.
Of course, all these memories are coming back as we talk about this kind of stuff because we've been, I remember whenever you got engaged, I was watching you before and how nervous you were or being each other's weddings.
Yeah.
And watching our kids grow up and difficulties in life and being there together. And I appreciate just having a good group of friends, you being one of them, just around me where I can feel free to talk about things and to be able to be open and honest about my anxiety struggles. And times you've helped me out and helped point me in the right directions and just a lot of times just listening to me. So thank you, Dr. Andrew Ryan Melton.
That's right. You are so welcome. And right back at you, right? I mean, so many times have we heard each other's stuff. And you bring up a great point here. Anxiety, just like other emotions, it's very intangible. And so when we talk about them, when we get them out of our head and we communicate those openly, just that in itself a lot of times can decrease the power and the intensity of anxiety. So you bring up a good point there. And yes, we've helped each other out quite a few times.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to end anytime soon because, like you say, anxiety is a part of life.
That's right.
And we were nervous men pacing around the room just, a couple weeks ago, hugging each other.
That's right.
So we watched the Super Bowl. We're grown, mature men, right?
Sometimes.
Sometimes. So, hey, listen, Andy, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for helping. I know this has been a really good conversation for me and some really good tangible tools for me that I hadn't done before. So thank you for those. And I do really appreciate your, providing your time to help us out with this.
Hey, you're quite welcome. Glad to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Okay. Absolutely. So, again, this is our week one of our podcast series. You can find out more about the scripture verses that are really good about anxiety. We'll put some links in the bio for just resources that you can access to talk to some professionals and just continue the conversations. Find those friends and have those conversations about kind of things that make you anxious and that we can continue to grow in these areas together. Again, our Instagram is where you can find everything else and our link in our bio at CH College Age, at CH College Age. So thank you and look forward to our next podcast with you.